Hello, listeners. This is Iris, and you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for today, Monday, March 18th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Let's take a look at the weather forecast for today first thing. This one coming from the National Weather Service. Today, expect sunny skies with a high near 40. It will be breezy with a north-northwest wind from 11 to 16 miles per hour, with gusts as high as 23 miles per hour. And tonight it will be mostly clear, with a low around 29 and still breezy. Tomorrow, sunny with a high near 55 and windy. And Tuesday night, clear with a low around 25 and blustery. Wednesday, sunny with a high near 52. And the clouds move in Wednesday night, so it'll be partly cloudy, and the low will be around 31. On Thursday, we are looking at a 30% chance of rain. Otherwise, it'll be partly sunny, with a high near 55 degrees. On Thursday night, the rain chances move up to 40%. It will be otherwise mostly cloudy, with a low around 31 degrees for Thursday night. And on Friday, the rain chances drop down to 30% and partly sunny skies with a high near 52 degrees, and it will still be breezy. Let's turn to the front page of the Courier today. The lead article says, AI is having a moment. The Courier's annual progress edition looks at AI in the Cedar Valley. Douglas Hines wrote this story, and the dateline is Waterloo. Artificial intelligence is having a moment. OpenAI launched the chat box ChatGPT on November 30th of 2022, sparking a discussion about AI that has permeated the media for the last year. AI has been around since 1950, when British mathematician and computer scientist Alan Turing, in his paper, quote, Computer Machinery and Intelligence, posed the question, quote, Can machines think? Unquote. And AI has had a moment several times in the 74 years since. In 1952, a computer scientist named Arthur Samuel developed a program to play checkers. In 1955, John McCarthy first used the term artificial intelligence at a workshop at Dartmouth, introducing it into popular usage. Moving ahead to 1997, Deep Blue, a chess computer developed by IBM, defeated chess world champion and grandmaster Garry Kasparov. In the years since, millions of people have said, Hey Siri, or asked Amazon's electronic personal assistant, Alexa, for help with everyday tasks, usually never stopping to consider that they are interfacing with forms of artificial intelligence. To many, artificial intelligence is a menacing notion. Long before HAL 9000 refused to open the pod bay doors for astronaut Dave Bauman in 2001 A Space Odyssey, or Skynet became self-aware in The Terminator, Americans have had a love-hate relationship with AI. But businesses, schools, and hospitals across the Cedar Valley are already implementing AI in their operations on a daily basis. Banks and financial advisors are using machine learning models for cybersecurity and to protect customers from fraud. Real estate firms are using AI for data mining, to virtually stage homes, and to develop marketing tools. AI is cutting diagnostic turnaround times at hospitals and reducing waits at clinical reception desks. It could augment pharmacists' and physicians' oversight of prescriptions. Artificial intelligence has the potential to ease loneliness and social isolation experienced by many older adults. At a recent Grow Cedar Valley Lunch and Learn program, a panel of local experts discussed opportunities AI presents for small businesses, the risks associated with AI projects, and practical applications of AI tools that are already available. Brian Haas, Executive Director of Enterprise Imaging Services for UnityPoint Health, discussed how artificial intelligence helps radiologists recognize critical findings, examining images and a patient's chart before the doctors to prioritize and triage, so the most important images are viewed right away. Joe Janinga, Director of Operations at United Equipment Accessories Incorporated in Waverly, said his company uses machine learning to monitor computer numerical control machines, among other things. Quote, "We have a lot of expensive CNC machines. When you crash one of those or have an accident with one of those, it's very expensive. There's the downtime, and you also lose all that production when it's down. So right now, we're using machine monitoring equipment that's basically AI-based," Zuninga said. Amy Igoe, Halverson Associate Professor at the University of Northern Iowa and Director of the Master of Accounting Program, said most of us use AI every day, whether it's letting Spotify pick a music playlist or for navigation when we're driving. She said AI is only as good as the prompts you feed it. You have to know what problem you're trying to solve if AI is going to help you solve it. That problem might be as simple as creating a presentation on artificial intelligence to share with a room full of people at Lunch and Learn. Igoe used ChatGPT to help her organize her February 29th talk. Quote, "Would I ever take those slides as done, put them in a flash drive, and talk in front of you without looking at them? Absolutely not. But when you're staring at a blank sheet of paper, this is a great way to get you unstuck," she said. Scott Hagberg, application and automation architect with VGM Group, said his company is injecting Microsoft Copilot into everything from everyday office operations to risk assessment in the insurance division. Quote, "My advice is embrace it, understand it, know the value. It's going to be impactful. But make it part of the conversation in every department, because every department will be impacted," Hagberg said. He gave an example of how generative AI could, quote, "sit in on a meeting and generate a complete transcript as well as a summary of action items. He could also, based on the company's marketing plan, ask AI to take the summary and draft a marketing plan. Quote, "It's going to. Maybe it's going to be 80%, something at the level of an intern. Then I'm going to look at it and I'm going to tweak it," unquote. From there, the program can be directed to create a PowerPoint, complete with images and presenter notes. Quote, "Take the company utilizing that and put it into competition with a company that's not. That has to have a full staff to do all the work. To me, you have to be part of the AI transition to be successful," Hagberg said. As funnel week ends, some bills are left behind. House and Senate Republican strategies on bills diverge. The story was written by Aaron Murphy, Caleb McCullough, and Tom Barton of the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. And the article begins with a photograph showing Iowa House Speaker Pat Grassley as he speaks to reporters in the Iowa House chamber. Dateline Des Moines. The second procedural deadline of the Iowa legislature's 2024 session created more legislative casualties Thursday. Longtime state legislator and Iowa Senator Pam Jochim, a Democrat from Dubuque, called it one of the strangest funnel weeks she's ever been part of. Many significant pieces of legislation are being left behind after failing to gain a prescribed level of support from both the Iowa House and Senate. Among those that did not advance, and thus are technically ineligible for consideration for the remainder of the session, include a controversial bill that could have made fertility treatments illegal and could have made state-level enforcement of immigration laws possible. Also left behind, a bill that would have defined man and woman in state law, and one that would have made it possible to obtain birth control without a prescription. While those bills are technically dead, leaders in the majority party, the Republicans, have multiple legislative tools at their disposal if they choose to resurrect a bill. The legislature's funnel deadlines do not apply to bills on tax policy or budget and spending bills. House education bills. In order to remain eligible moving forward, House passed bills needed to be approved by Senate committees. Among the casualties at the end of this funnel week were a pair of House Republican bills on public education. One would have limited diversity, equity, and inclusion programs at the state's three public universities, and another would have required a K-12 social studies curriculum written by a conservative think tank that focuses on the, quote, cultural heritage of Western civilization, unquote. House Republicans approved both of these bills, but Senate Republicans did not advance them this week. They are now ineligible for further consideration. Representative Schuyler Wheeler, a Republican from Hull, who chairs the House Education Committee, said House Republicans felt good about both bills and were disappointed they were not advanced by Senate Republicans. Quote, "Those are two major reforms, two major pieces that we wanted in the House that they have not taken up. So I'm disappointed in that, and I don't understand their logic or reasoning for that," Wheeler said Thursday. Later, Senator Ken Rosenboom, a Republican from Pella, who chairs the Senate Education Committee, said he had concerns that the bill impacting the public universities would be too expensive. A fiscal analysis by the state's nonpartisan legislative services agency projected the proposal would require three new full-time positions at the Board of Regents, which governs the state's public universities, at a cost to the board between $850,000 and $3.6 million. Rosenboom also had issues with the timing. Quote, "We had less than 2 weeks before the second funnel deadline, so I simply did not feel we had time to do justice to the bill," he said. "I've often said I want to do things right, not quickly, if I can't do both." What GOP leaders say. The policy disagreements extended to the top ranks at the Capitol, where House and Senate Republican leaders charted different approaches and metrics of success on Thursday, noting that many House bills that the Senate opted not to advance, Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer, a Republican from Grimes, said he was satisfied that the Senate had a far narrower scope for its legislative agenda, and said Iowa does not need hundreds of new pieces of legislation this year. The Senate has passed 51 bills out of the chamber, while the House has passed 150 bills. Quote, "I think Iowa's in a really good spot, and we don't need that many bills, in my opinion, to make Iowa strong and to keep Iowa strong," he said. "And so we don't need to pass 200 bills, 300 bills, to keep Iowa strong," unquote. Whitfer said the week was a successful funnel week, noting that a number of Republican Governor Kim Reynolds' proposed bills remain eligible under the deadline. The remaining work for Senate Republicans includes a bill to overhaul the state's area education agencies, lowering taxes, and crafting a budget, he said. Whitfer said the work Senate Republicans have done over the last 7 years has set Iowa up for success. Quote, "The House, they have newer members, and so they're coming down with newer issues. And I respect that, and I get that," Whitfer said. "But overall, big picture in Iowa, we're in a great spot," unquote. House Speaker Pat Grassley, Republican from New Hartford, said Thursday he is hoping to be able to continue pushing for reconsideration of some of the bills that faltered this week. Grassley said he was frustrated that some bills, like controls on the payments charged by temporary health care staffing agencies, did not advance in the Senate. Lawmakers could introduce any range of policy bills in future budget proposals or tack policy ideas onto related bills later in the session to resurrect proposals that stalled this week. Quote, there's been some issues that we've brought forward at the beginning of the session that we passed over early enough that didn't see the light of day. We feel need to be continued as part of the ongoing conversations between the House and the Senate, Grassley said. What Democrats say. House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst, Democrat from Windsor Heights, and Jochum, the Democratic leader in the Senate, accused Republicans of voting and passing bills to serve special interests at the expense of Iowans. While passing bills that seek to expand affordable and workforce housing in the state, a priority of Democrats, they noted Republicans also pursued legislation that would jeopardize fertility treatments, limit Iowa's ability to sue pesticide companies when their products are linked to serious health problems, and require schools to teach a list of social studies concepts developed by a conservative think tank. None of those bills, however, advanced past the funnel this week. Meanwhile, a bill that would expand medical coverage for firefighters with cancer did not advance in the Republican-controlled Iowa Senate, and legislation allowing access to birth control without prescription continues to meet resistance from conservative House Republicans. Proposals that would freeze tuition for Iowa college students and that would provide state employees who give birth up to 4 weeks of paid leave also stalled out. Quote, honestly, we have traveled all over the state over the summer and fall conducting listening sessions to hear what Iowans have to say, Jochum said. And the issues that we are dealing with in this session are none of the issues that people have asked us to deal with. Quote, they have asked us to fully fund education, Jochum continued. They have asked us to stop stripping away local control from school boards and cities and counties. They want us to invest in the environment and to have clean water in lakes and rivers. So those are the kinds of things Iowans have been asking to deal with, and right now we have not been, unquote. The two criticized Republican lawmakers for passing a bill that would create a new grant program to help schools that choose to arm staff members, while lawmakers missed the deadline for setting state education funding, leaving Iowa's public schools flying blind as they set their budgets. They also faulted their colleagues for failing to advance legislation to expand early childhood education. Quote, I would say as we look forward, let's look at a budget that's going to actually serve everyday Iowans, Confirst said. So as we go through the process, we're going to be looking to see how do these budgets reflect the state's priorities, not the priorities of the Republican governor or the Republican majority, but the priorities of our state, unquote. Bicyclist hit by pickup truck in Cedar Falls. Woman hospitalized due to injuries received. Story was written by Andy Malone. Dateline, Cedar Falls. A 20-year-old woman on a bicycle suffered life-threatening injuries after reportedly being hit by a pickup truck Wednesday on a trail at the entrance of Pheasant Ridge Golf Course, according to Captain Kelly Yates. The eastbound white GMC left the roadway and hit the eastbound bike, several signs in a tree on the path along 12th Street, at approximately 3:40 p.m., while swerving to avoid rear-ending a vehicle turning left into the golf course, 3205 West 12th Street. The injured woman was taken to the University of Iowa Hospitals and Clinics. The driver of the pickup was not hurt and was not issued a citation at the time, as officers continued to investigate, said Yates. The Cedar Falls Police Department was assisted by Cedar Falls Fire Rescue, Iowa State Patrol, Mercy One, Black Hawk County Dispatch, and Rasmussen Towing. Elderly Waverly man rescued from ravine. He fell 60 feet by cabin north of West Union. This was written by courier staff, and the dateline is West Union. Fayette County first responders on Tuesday rescued an 81-year-old Waverly man who'd fallen 60 feet into a ravine. The sheriff's office recounted the incident and response on Facebook a day later, having received the call at approximately 4:08 p.m. from that man, Dwayne Falsky, after he'd stumbled amidst checking his cabin property near a quarry in the area between Juniper Road and J Avenue north of West Union. Fayette County Sheriff deputies were joined by West Union firefighters and paramedics in conducting a search and rescue operation across more than 80 acres of densely wooded ravines. While a foot search of the immediate area began, police completed an aerial drone coverage. Much of the area was inaccessible by vehicles, including utility terrain vehicles, the sheriff's office post stated. Sheriff Marty Fisher reportedly located Falsky in the southeast area of the property. He monitored the fallen man while directing the rescue team to the location. Once the patient was treated and stable, first responders carried him out of the ravine and transported him to Gunderson Palmer Hospital. The West Union Fire Department, Iowa Department of Natural Resources, Gunderson's Tri-State Ambulance, and the Fayette Police Department assisted the Sheriff's Department in the rescue. SWAT team deployed. Cedar Falls. Police officers responded to a report of shots fired early Thursday in the 400 block of North Davison Street. The Cedar Falls SWAT team was called to assist with the incident, which occurred around 2 a.m. Details weren't available, but no one was injured, and one person was transported to the hospital for evaluation. The incident remains under investigation. Cedar Falls Public Safety was assisted by Blackhawk County Consolidated Dispatch, the Blackhawk County Sheriff's Office, and Mercy One paramedics. Excellence Expo shows students' path for future. 6th to 12th graders to learn about arts, life skills at April 12th event. Melody Parker wrote this story, and it begins with the photograph, which shows students in a circle kneeling in front of, it looks like, plastic drums, and they each have a set of drumsticks, and there is an instructor in front of the group. Dateline Waterloo. A college and career fair, skills seminars, and art workshops are planned for 6th through 12th graders during the Excellence Expo on April 12th. The event, presented by Marching Against the Darkness, will take place at the Waterloo Convention Center. Hours are 1 to 6 p.m. There is no cost, but registration is required by March 29th at www.matd.org. Marching Against the Darkness provides a performing arts platform that challenges disadvantaged, underrepresented, and disconnected youths to achieve excellence, both in competition and in life, said Darvel Givens, the executive director. Originally, the organization sponsored an annual competition for dance, color guard, and percussion drill teams. The Marching Against the Darkness drill team competition, which attracts teams from more than 10 states, will take place on July 13th at Young Arena. Quote, then we begin thinking about what more can we do for young people? How can we set kids on a good path? We use the performing arts as a vehicle and magnet to draw kids and then offer the Excellence Expo to get them thinking about what's next, said Givens. Quote, growing up is inevitable. Most kids don't have their futures all figured out. We want to get the wheels turning and encourage kids to consider their options and path, he explained. The Excellence Expo fulfills the nonprofit organization's mission to, quote, achieve excellence in life. It's fun and uplifting for students and gives them a positive experience that can help them as they make choices about their futures, Givens said. All participants are required to take part in the college and career fair. Students can visit a variety of vendors, including 2- and 4-year colleges and universities, post-secondary resources, and military and employment opportunities. Art workshops will include dance, step, color guard, and percussion. Instructors will emphasize persistence, patience, teamwork, sportsmanship, and confidence. Students will learn and perform a short routine at the conclusion of the expo. Quote, arts workshops are a fun way for kids to learn these soft skills, like teamwork and discipline, that are so important in the workplace as adults and throughout our lives, Givens said. Instructors will discuss using the arts as an avenue for scholarships and getting involved in other arts and music programs. Presenters include Casey Martin, leading the drums workshop, Tashay Williams, directing the dance workshop, Marshall Fraser, step workshop leader, and Amber Day, color guard and flag workshop facilitator. A series of skill seminars will focus on financial education, leadership, and mental wellness. Presenters will include Chris Timms, history teacher and lead wrestling coach at East High School in Waterloo, Santara Martin, branch manager at Community Bank and Trust, and Ashley Caldwell, founder and CEO of Ashley Speak, and partnership program manager with Tri-County Child and Family Development Council, and executive coordinator of the Weekly Connection Consulting Services. The expo is being coordinated with TRIO, TRIO programs, Waterloo Community Schools, and local youth organizations to offer the sessions to, quote, students of disadvantaged, underprivileged, and diverse backgrounds, Givens said. He expects about 500 students to attend. Participants will be provided lunch. A new component is the parent fair, which allows parents of attending students to connect with vendors at the college and career fair. Sponsors are still being sought. Contact Givens at area code 319-504-2309 or email director at matd.org. Cedar Valley Family STEM Festival set for Tuesday at the Unidome, Dateline Cedar Falls. The Cedar Valley Family STEM Festival will be held 4 to 7 p.m. Tuesday at the Unidome, 2501 Hudson Road, on the University of Northern Iowa campus. The goals of the festival are to promote, inspire, and engage youth in science, technology, engineering, and mathematics opportunities, and to introduce youth and their parents to STEM careers. Organized like a street festival or a county fair, visitors stroll from activity to activity at their leisure. All ages are welcome to attend. Exhibits will feature interactive STEM activities for students and their families. Attendees may conduct amazing science experiments, observe and interact with robots, perform surgery with a laparoscopic surgical trainer, experience virtual reality, measure electricity usage of common electronic devices, and more. Go online to their website to learn more. Here we have a photograph of a young girl with her hand on a Van de Graaff generator and her hair is standing straight up. And the caption says, Cassie Ware laughs as she watches her hair stand up while learning about static electricity at the 2018 Cedar Valley Family STEM Festival. And the article goes on. The Cedar Valley Family STEM Festival is a community-wide partnership led by the Northeast region of the Iowa Governor's STEM Advisory Council in partnership with the Cedar Falls and Waterloo Community School Districts, Central Rivers Area Education Agency, Hawkeye Community College, John Deere, University of Northern Iowa STEM and Volunteer Center of the Cedar Valley. The festival is free and open to the public. And now, listeners, we just want to take a moment to remind you that you're listening to the reading of the Waterloo Cedar Falls Courier for today, Monday, March 18th, on IRIS, that's IRIS, the Iowa Radio Reading Information Service for the Blind and the Print Handicapped. Now, this message.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Turning the page now, we find we're in the Week in Iowa section. And the first story is titled, Big Bills Left Behind. This week marked a key deadline in the Iowa legislature, as bills that were not far enough along in the lawmaking process will no longer be eligible for consideration. There are ways for leaders to bring bills back, but it marks a key benchmark as lawmakers turn their attention to a smaller pool of legislation and begin to look at tax and budget policy. A number of high-profile bills did not advance past Friday's deadline. A bill defining man and woman in Iowa law, crimes for human smuggling of immigrants, a proposal to allow birth control without prescription, and a set of conservative social studies curricula were all among the bills that did not advance this year. Bill limits hemp THC products. Iowa House lawmakers passed a bill this week to significantly limit the potency of hemp-derived THC products sold at shops and bars around the state. The bill would require that those products contain no more than 4 milligrams of THC per serving and 10 milligrams per package, which would disqualify most THC products sold at retailers in Iowa. Action on film tax incentives. Iowa lawmakers gave first approval to a bill that would reinstate a long-defunct tax rebate for film productions in Iowa. The previous program was repealed more than a decade ago after it was reported that $26 million in funds were improperly issued by the state. Lawmakers promise there will be more oversight this time. And now here are some quotations under the heading, They Said. Quote, I think Iowa is in a really good spot, and we don't need that many bills, in my opinion, to make Iowa strong and to keep Iowa strong. And so we don't need to pass 200 bills, 300 bills, to keep Iowa strong. Iowa Senate Majority Leader Jack Whitfer on legislative session. And next, quote, I would say as we look forward, let's look at a budget that's going to actually serve everyday Iowans. So as we go through the process, we're going to be looking to see how do these budgets reflect the state's priorities, not the priorities of the Republican governor or the Republican majority, but the priorities of our state, unquote. Iowa House Minority Leader Jennifer Confirst on legislative budget priorities. Under the heading Odds and Ends, we have candidates file. Several candidates filed their nomination papers to qualify for the ballot in Iowa's upcoming primary and general elections this week. Friday marked the deadline for candidates to file, and Democratic congressional challengers like Christina Bohannon and 1st District Sarah Kokery in the 2nd District and Landon Bacom in the 3rd District filed this week. School gun grants. Iowa House Republicans passed a bill this week that included an unfunded grant program to allow schools to purchase guns and training for trained staff to carry guns on campus. Should the program become law, it would be funded through a later state budget process. Now, around the water cooler. Immigration bill stopped. A bill that would have made it illegal to transport or harbor undocumented immigrants in certain situations will not move forward in the legislature after failing to pass a legislative deadline this week. Opponents worried it could lead to felonies for providing aid and housing to immigrants. Property taxes. Iowa property owners will receive a new letter in the mail this year showing them the current and proposed local property tax rates and the total dollars levied by the resident city, school, and county. The letter was required by a 2023 law that lawmakers hoped would increase transparency about property taxes. And now, in the news column, House votes for potential TikTok ban. Iowa's members of the U.S. House all joined a bipartisan vote this week on a bill that would ban TikTok from United States app stores unless its Chinese parent company, ByteDance, sells its U.S. assets. Lawmakers say the bill is necessary to prevent China from collecting data on Americans or using the app to influence public opinion. TikTok has characterized the move as an all-out ban and an attempt to suppress the free speech of its millions of users. The app directed its users to call members of Congress last week as a key committee was set to take a vote. Iowa's Ashley Hinson, who sits on the select committee that originated the bill, was seen on social media post personally answering the office phone and explaining to a caller why she supported the bill. Massive fertilizer spill in Red Oak. An estimated 150 tons of liquid nitrogen fertilizer, about 265,000 gallons, leaked from a co-op in Red Oak this week and into the East Nishnabotna River. The Iowa DNR is still investigating the extent of the fish kill and other damage caused by the spill. Iowa has hundreds of impaired waters. Iowa has 576 segments of waterways that are impaired, according to a report from the Iowa Department of Natural Resources. The number represents more than half of the assessed streams, rivers, and lake segments in Iowa, but it is down 21 from the year 2022. Now let's read the Metro Briefs column. Foundation to host annual breakfast. Dateline Waterloo. The Waterloo Schools Foundation's annual Sparking Academic Excellence Breakfast returns for a 10th year at the Waterloo Convention Center on April 25th from 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. The program includes a presentation from East High School graduate and former National Football League player J.J. Moses, who will be on hand to discuss his book, Focused, The Prepare to Win Mindset. The State of the District Address will be presented by Superintendent Jared Smith. Other highlights include representation and displays by students and staff from all 19 schools across the Waterloo Community School District. There will be an introduction by Foundation Executive Director Hannah Luce and an energetic program moderated by MC Gina Weekly. Doors open to the public at 6:45 a.m. Tickets are $30 per person, and corporate sponsorships start at $250. Go online to the website for more information or to reserve a seat. Mental Health Breakfast to be held. Dateline Cedar Falls. Unity Point Health Blackhawk Grundy Mental Health Center will host the annual Mental Health Awareness Breakfast on May 10th. The breakfast will be held from 7 to 9 a.m. at the Bienvenue Event Center in Cedar Falls. It is in partnership with the Allen Foundation. Proceeds will benefit mental health services in the Cedar Valley at a time of continued increases in depression, grief, loss, and other mental health conditions. The event will feature keynote speaker Johanna Ranavardi and her service dog Mocha. Ranavardi will share her personal journey, including the loss of her oldest son, Zach, to suicide, and how she has found triumph through his adversity. As a physical education instructor, she will address the pressures, expectations, and emotional toll that comes with the pursuit of excellence, and how others can offer support as a coach, teammate, parent, or fan. Previous events have attracted more than 700 guests and raised more than $300,000 for services at Blackhawk Grundy Mental Health Center. Tickets are $60 each or $420 for a table of eight. The deadline to order is April 26th. Contact the Allen Foundation at area code 319-274-6710 or visit giveunitypoint.org for more information or to purchase tickets. Waterloo Council to discuss rebuilding Broadway Street. Story filed by Maria Cooper, and the dateline is Waterloo. The city is starting the process of rebuilding one of Waterloo's main roads. The City Council will hold a public hearing for the reconstruction of Broadway Street when it meets at 5:30 p.m. on Monday at City Hall. This year, the area on Broadway Street from Donald Street to U.S. Highway 218 will be fully reconstructed. The engineer's estimate for the project is $6.7 million. Four bids were received, ranging from $4.6 to $5.2 million. The council will also be discussing the reconstruction of Kinsley Avenue, which is located between Orange Grove and Kimball Avenues. The engineer's estimate for this project is $900,000, and five bids were received, ranging from $631,000 to $765,000. Multiple development agreements for infill housing will also be considered. The city could sell 216 Sunnyside Avenue to Iowa Heartland Habitat for Humanity for $1 with a $5,000 infill grant upon completion for the construction of a single-family home. It could also sell 215 Locust Street to Marcelino Balian Perez for $5,000 for rehabilitation of the home. Once completed, Perez would be refunded $5,000 and receive a $5,000 infill grant. Net Worth Investment LLC is planning to build a 10-unit residential building on an infill lot near 2557 West 3rd Street. The corporation would receive $50,000 infill incentive upon completion. The council will also consider the following: a 14-lot commercial subdivision between Logan Avenue and East 4th Street as part of the North Crossing addition, and termination of a development and minimum assessment agreement with GMJ2 Industries for failing to complete a project at 2330 GT Drive, which was originally approved in the year 2015. Cedar Falls Utility okays developing plans for a new plant. Story written by Andy Malone. Dateline Cedar Falls. One of the latest votes taken by the Cedar Falls Utilities Board of Trustees affirmed to Bill Skubal that, quote, "We do want to go down this road of constructing a new power plant." That vote was unanimous Wednesday in bringing aboard Design Consulting to assist in preparing what the director of operations said afterwards will be one set of preliminary plans focused on energy generators for the massive project. The proposed undertaking, as known as the Reciprocating Engine Electric Generation Facilities, officials say, has been years in the making and is expected to be the most expensive project in the municipal utility's history. The board consensus came without discussion at the meeting and is among what's expected to be many decisions related to the new plant. The plant, powered primarily by fossil fuels, would be capable of booting up within minutes and improve electricity reliability at a time when renewable energy usage is growing and coal-fired and nuclear plants are closing. DeWild, Grant, Recker & Associates Company of Rock Rapids will provide the consulting as part of an estimated $133,000 option included in a master contract executed by the CFU board in 2016. Quote, "Based on the results of the preliminary engineering study, CFU intends to proceed with the development of a 20 to 40 megawatt reciprocating engine generator facility. This facility will be located near the Viking Road substation," states a work summary. Quote, "The following scope of work advances the project development by working to finalize key project decisions through preliminary design and includes assembling documentation for necessary regulatory approvals. Work documents note tasks ranging from helping determine the size, type, and quantity of the engines to identify a configuration for interfacing with existing infrastructure, selecting a type of cooling system, and updating the cost estimates and project schedule. In 2022, CFU spent $67,000 on a feasibility study of the possible plant as part of the same 2016 contract with the consultants, also known as DGR Engineering. Company leaders presented those findings this summer. The study estimated the plant being capable of generating 28.17 megawatts at a time and costing approximately $64 million. The utility would likely sell bonds for the first time since 2015 to help pay for a majority of it. Approximately 2 years of construction would be involved and wrap up as soon as 2027. Bid letting on the energy generation plans could happen around Labor Day, September 2nd, Skubal said. The feasibility study and design consulting have been the only two expenditures directly related to the project planning, confirmed Tiffany Bolin, CFU marketing specialist, over email. However, there has been some equipment purchased for the Viking Road substation with the potential undertaking in mind. No final decision has been made on future location, said Skubal, though he hinted one of the two possibilities is considered the favorite, likely the one, blatantly stated in the consulting work description, near the Viking Road substation. Other Midwest utilities have taken on such reciprocating energy projects, Molly Strauss, marketing manager, previously told the Courier. They include Omaha Public Power District in Nebraska, Rochester Municipal in Minnesota, Central Iowa Power Cooperative in Cedar Rapids, and WEC Energy in Milwaukee. Congressional challengers file to run for office. This article comes from Caleb McCullough and Sarah Watson of the Quad City Times, and the dateline is Des Moines. Iowa congressional candidates filed nomination papers to run for office this week ahead of Friday's deadline for candidates to file to appear on the ballot. Candidates in Iowa's four congressional districts will be on the ballot this November, along with races in Iowa State House and Senate. This year's primary election will be held on June 4th. Democrat Christina Bohannon, a former state representative challenging incumbent U.S. Representative Marionette Miller Meeks, a Republican, in Iowa's 1st Congressional District, was at the Capitol on Thursday to submit her nomination petition. Running in a district National Democrats see potential to flip, Bohannon said she wants to bring a bipartisan voice to Congress. The district includes the heavily Democratic Johnson County and GOP strongholds like Van Buren and Mahaska counties. She argued Miller Meeks does not look for bipartisan solutions and caters to the far-right extreme members of her party. Quote, "We need to find solutions. We need to work together," Bohannon said, "to really tackle the problems that Iowans are facing, and we need to get away from this divide that we see and this extreme Washington, D.C. politics," unquote. Miller Meeks filed for re-election in February, saying 2024 would be a pivotal election surrounded by issues that face everyday Iowans, unquote. Miller Meeks's campaign did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Miller Meeks is also facing a challenger from the right in the upcoming primary election from Minister David Pouch. Pouch filed to appear on the ballot on Monday. Pouch announced this week he received campaign endorsements from former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee and Mike Lindell, the CEO of MyPillow, who was among the loudest voices spreading false claims denying the results of the 2020 election. Pouch said he's running because he believes the country is becoming too secular and Miller Meeks is not conservative or biblical enough in her decisions. He cites her support for the Respect for Marriage Act, a bipartisan measure that required the federal government to recognize marriages performed legally in states, regardless of the sex or race of the couple, and clarifies that religious organizations are not required to perform same-sex marriages. Sarah Corkery, a Cedar Falls businesswoman running against Representative Ashley Hinson in Iowa's 2nd Congressional District, also filed her petition to run for office this week. Corkery, a Democrat, cited votes from Hinson that she believed had hurt Iowans, including voting against the Inflation Reduction Act and federal infrastructure law. Quote, "My whole career, I have been an advocate for breast cancer research and disability rights. I have started a business with my husband, and I have raised a family with 3 kids here," Corkery said. Quote, "Northeast Iowa is a special place, and our families deserve a representative who recognizes that, not a mouthpiece for the Republican Party and their corporate donors," unquote. When Hinson filed to appear on the ballot in February, she criticized the federal leadership under President Joe Biden and said border security would be among her top issues this cycle. When Corkery announced her candidacy last year, Hinson's campaign said she would be a rubber stamp for the radical Biden agenda, unquote. Quote, "We can't wait to contrast Sarah's extreme liberal views with Ashley's record of delivering conservative results for Iowans," said campaign manager Addie Lavis at the time. Representative Zach Nunn in Iowa's 3rd Congressional District and Randy Feenstra in Iowa's 4th District both filed their paperwork to run for office in February. Democrat Lannon Bacom submitted his nomination petition Thursday morning to run in the 3rd Congressional District. Melissa Vine, a Des Moines nonprofit director, also filed to run in the Democratic Party for the seat on Thursday, a campaign spokesperson said. Feenstra faces a Republican primary challenge by Kevin Virgil, an Army veteran and former intelligence worker. Democrat Ryan Melton filed to run in the heavily Republican district on Monday. Unions and builders oppose jobless tax cut, but lawmakers advance a bill to see fiscal markup. Tom Barton is the author of this article, and he's at the Courier's Des Moines Bureau. Dateline Des Moines. Representatives for Iowa labor unions and the state's construction industry urged lawmakers to hit the brakes on a proposal to lower the tax rates businesses pay to fund benefits for unemployed workers. House Republican lawmakers on Thursday advanced House Study Bill 735 in order to gather more information about its potential impact. Representative Dave DeJoy, a Republican from Nevada, who chaired the House subcommittee, said he advanced the bill in order to seek a detailed fiscal analysis of the bill's impact from the nonpartisan Legislative Services Agency. The bill cleared the subcommittee 2-1, with Democratic Representative Monica Kurth of Davenport opposed. DeJoy said the bill will be considered by the House Ways and Means Committee next week. DeJoy said lawmakers want the Legislative Services analysis so they can be assured that when unemployment rises during a recession, business taxes won't have to be raised to keep Iowa's unemployment trust fund solvent. Bills must pass out of committee before receiving a Legislative Services fiscal note to create a more manageable workload for the agency. Quote, "We don't know yet that the math works," DeJoy said. "So if the math doesn't work, we're not going to do it as is." Governor Kim Reynolds proposed the tax cut in January as part of a larger package of tax reductions. Under her proposal, Iowa would cut the taxable wage base in half and reduce unemployment taxes by about 40%. Under the bill, Iowa employers would pay a maximum rate of 5.4% on wages up to $18,000 per employee, as opposed to the current 7% on wages, up to $36,000 per employee. It would also reduce the number of taxable tables from 8 to 4, and reduce tax table rankings from 21 to 9, effectively cutting overall tax categories. Reynolds' office estimated the cost would save Iowa employers more than $800 million over 5 years. Quote, "We turned our unemployment system into a re-employment system, and it's having the intended effect," unquote, Reynolds said during her annual Condition of the State address in January. Representatives for the Iowa Federation of Labor, AFL-CIO, and IBEW, Iowa State Conference, worried that Iowa's unemployment trust fund will face challenges in the long term if the economy takes a downturn and business tax rates don't keep the fund alive. Nick Lanning, a lobbyist for the union that represents electrical workers, said with recent layoffs by John Deere and the closure of the Tyson plant in Perry, now is not the time to make drastic changes to the state's unemployment trust fund. Quote, "I know the economy looks good from the outside right now, but we're seeing some signs even in Iowa that we could have some issues," Lanning told lawmakers. The Iowa State Building and Construction Trades is registered against the bill. John Murphy, a lobbyist representing the group, said the state funding for infrastructure-related projects, quote, "is going to be seeing some challenges going forward," unquote. And now, listeners, that's going to do it for today's reading of the Waterloo-Cedar Falls Courier for today, Monday, March 18th. I'm your volunteer reader, Bob Young. Remember, if you want to listen to a recording of this reading of the Courier or of any of the other newspapers around the state that we read, just visit our website, iowaradioreading.org, at any time. And we want to thank you for listening to your IRIS, Iowa's first and only radio reading service.